The Veterans Report is sponsored by James Cannon.
Welcome to the Veterans Report, the region's only show dedicated to those who have served our country. We have the latest news and information on resources available to veterans, including health care, education, employment tips, local volunteer organizations, and more. To those who have served, those who are serving, and to those who will, we salute you. And now, the host of the Veterans Report, Jim Cannon.
Welcome back to the Veterans Report. We appreciate you tuning in. If you are listening on the radio, I think it's pretty evident where you are. If you're going to go online, you can use the TuneIn app and look for 620 AM KHB, or you can go on the khbradio.com website. Also, keep in mind, any news covered here or topics will be on theveteransreport.com website. That's one word, theveteransreport.com, as well as our Facebook page and Twitter account. So if you're socially media adept and active, jump on there, join up, get in the conversation. The Twitter's a lot more fun. It's a little lighthearted, a lot of retweets. Anyway, again, appreciate you joining us today. We have some very special guests at the halfway mark in the show. We have the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. We have two gentlemen with the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. And so we're going to be talking about what they do, their mission, sort of their history, and what's going on with them currently. It's a great organization, one of the big ones nationally, too. And should be an interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are, too. So stay tuned, at least through the halfway mark, and then you can hear a really cool interview. I'm belaboring this because I was trying to get my laptop set. It's a delay tactic. There's a lot of stuff that happened this week. So David Shulkin, our buddy, the VA secretary, Dr. David Shulkin, he is still on a tear. I know that if you read recent media reports, they're going to be dour and negative, and you know he's under fire and on the ropes and all this other stuff for this whole ethics investigation, which frankly is, to me, it's peanuts. I get it from an ethics standpoint, but it's ridiculous, and I'm not going to keep rehashing it. But anyway, so David Shulkin this week got rid of three regional directors in what they're referring to as a major overhaul. Embattled VA Secretary David Shulkin, has announced a top-to-bottom management overhaul of the agency, beginning with the ouster of three regional directors in charge of hospitals and clinics in 12 states serving 3 million vets. Now, this is on the heels of an announcement earlier in the week from the VA Inspector General's Office charging the widespread, quote, leadership failures, end quote, at the Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center that put patients at risk. So Shulkin went in, basically teed up a couple of folks and said, "You're gone," which I don't wholly disagree with. I've said this before, and I'm going to keep saying it. I'm a big fan of this guy because I think now he has, and it's not to stray too far into the political spectrum. And keep in mind, this is an Obama holdover, right? He was there for the Obama administration. And, you know, Trump comes into office and suddenly Shulkin's ramped up and he's, you know, he's knocking heads and he's getting rid of people and he's making changes at a whirlwind pace. So I think a lot of what he's doing is because he has, there's no obstacle there. Trump went in and basically said, "Here, let me move this wall for you. Go." Not to sound overtly partisan, because it's not a partisan issue. I think any president, you know, George Bush or Reagan or whoever, right? Clinton, they all sort of operated the same way. I mean, Trump is definitely a unique character. I won't even say a politician. He's a unique character, and he's doing things completely different than the model that was that existed. And so I think as a result of that, people like David Shulkin now have momentum. They now have the initiative. They can seize the initiative to go out and make changes that they've wanted to make. I read a report earlier this week that basically labeled Shulkin ineffective and said he didn't perform at all under Obama. And I don't think that is solely because of who he is. I think there were obstacles, administrative and bureaucratic obstacles in the way. And so I think with under Trump, you know, Shulkin definitely has sort of a clear path, and he has a green light to go in there and make the changes. Trump campaigned on making changes, and he is, right? The VA is making changes, and I think 99% of them have been positive. Now, we still find these anomalies, these awful stories, you know, one out of every 15 or 20 where it's bad management, or what was the thing? I'm not sure if I have it. It was in the Phoenix VA. Oh, yeah. Phoenix VA cited for leaving chemicals and other dangerous items near veterans with mental health problems. That's the next story I had teed up. But it's stuff like that where we focus on the bad instead of all of the wonderful changes that are occurring within that system. And frankly, it's because the media is complicit in that too, right? If it bleeds, it leads. Well, nobody wants to hear about a positive, you know, a two-page legislative shift that you know, it's not exciting. It's not riveting. But changes are coming. So anyway, I just thought this was a great story to walk through because it's illustrative of Shulkin again, you know, with wind in his sails, doing what he's supposed to be doing. So he got rid of three regional directors. And that's a big deal. That's a big deal. You know, these people probably thought they had a job for life. They were wrong. You know, I was going to wade through the whole Florida gun bill thing. I don't want to get too far into that because, to my knowledge, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I missed the story. It hasn't been signed off by Governor Scott yet. But the Florida legislature, passed a bill this week that is, in essence, gun control. I mean, it's pretty restrictive. And there was a provision in there. I'm trying to do this off the top of my head, but there was a provision in there that had to do, getting some kind of an ownership certificate if you had, I think it was an AR-15, if you had a semi-automatic rifle, you'd get an ownership certificate, which sounds, not to sound all tin hat, you know, tinfoil hat-ish, but that sounds like gun registration, which is a big no-no. So, anyway, I'm not going to wade too far into that. Just keep it on your radar. That fight, I think, is just beginning down there. I get it, right? I get the whole emotional reaction to it. Like, oh, we keep hearing we've got to do something. Well, you can do something without, you know, tossing aside constitutional rights and protections. And it's a fine line to walk, but and it's not just the Second Amendment. I mean, that's the focus today. But there are other things sort of on the radar that a lot of people aren't paying attention to. And I think we as Americans take those rights for granted. And so we need to be very, very careful in how we manipulate them. There's my editorial statement for the day. But yeah, I'm not going to get too far into that because that is a weighted and heady discussion to have. Speaking of weighted and heady, I do want to take a minute to thank our partners, our online partners at WTFNationRadio.com. They have been wonderful to work with. What a wonderful counterbalance to everything we're doing here. And frankly, they have a lot of fun. I'm not saying this show itself isn't fun, but theirs is hours and hours of laughing and I mean, serious topics, but good-natured humor too. So WTFNationRadio.com. If you haven't listened to it, tune in. It's good stuff. So in the feel-good story section of life, we have there's a story about a nonprofit. Now, we've covered a couple of these sporting nonprofit. They call them sporting nonprofits or outdoor nonprofit, whatever you want to call them, that deal with skiing, downhill skiing, as sort of an alternative therapy. And there was a story about another one, an Afghanistan vet started this one. I guess he was a lifetime skier. He was originally from Lake Tahoe, which has slopes everywhere out there. And I got to ski those many years ago when I was younger and my knees could take it. But anyway, so he moved to, where was it? Was it Jackson Hole? Might have been Jackson Hole, Wyoming. He moved there after getting out of the military. And basically, the story is that when he was going through mountain warfare training and when he was deployed overseas, he used to, you know, look at the mountains and he'd think, man, I'd love to be skiing. And when he got home, he thought, man, this would be an interesting way to sort of alleviate some of the post-traumatic stress. And it started out with a visit to the VA, which I just covered them. But it's his experience was not as positive as it could have been. And so he walked out of there and thought, man, that was horrible. And decided, I'm going to take something I love. I'm going to take a passion. And I'm going to get people engaged in this passion. And so he started a thing called the Front Country Foundation. And they basically use downhill skiing as an alternative therapy. And on the typical trip, the idea is for beginner skiers to start at ground school at one of the slopes in Jackson Hole. And then sort of work their way up. Obviously, it's not for everybody. You know, skiing takes a little bit of skill, but that's kind of cool, right? Take a passion and turn it into something that helps others. And but again, we're seeing more and more of that. We're seeing these sort of, I don't even know what you'd call it, but they're sprouting up everywhere. There's skiing, it's diving, it's using equine therapy. I think we covered one back in December about ice fishing. You know, a small group had been using ice fishing as a therapy. So I think the message is, the point is, if you have a passion out there, if you have a passion, whether it's outdoors or you know, indoors, being creative, writing and painting, like our friends at Tactical 16. Another shout out to our friends there. Tactical 16 is a publisher that handles veteran authors. So, you know, in essence, that organization is one of these initiatives, albeit on sort of a different plane. But again, the message is, if you have a passion for something and you think other people would enjoy it and they can dial into it as a means of helping themselves, try it. You know, it's also a good way, if nothing else, to build a peer group, right? Build some friendships. And you still get to do what you want to do. You still get to enjoy your whatever it is, your love, your passion. But I think those stories are worth covering as well. I mean, we often cover legislative stuff and political things and obviously the VA and, you know, the larger VSOs, the national organizations. But I think it's important to also cover feel-good stories like that, because that's an easy one, right? You're not going to start a multi-million dollar nonprofit right out of the gate. I mean, you know, if you like going out and, I don't know, if you like going out and cutting down trees and splitting it into logs, there might be other people who enjoy doing that. I will tell you, I've done that, and I like it because it's a good workout. You get out whatever aggression you have pent up. You get fresh air, exercise, and it's, I don't know, it's, I just use that as an example. Maybe cooking, right? But I think it's important to cover those. So what else? What else do we have? So many stories. Here I did find the story that sort of lambasted Shulkin for his time under Barack Obama. But I'm not gonna. There are days you wonder if maybe the media doesn't have enough to do. I would think, given the political climate, they should be busy 24/7. Here's one: dying vets cannot use life-ending drugs at many California veterans' homes. This is a story pulled from... This was in a couple of different outlets. I pulled this one from the ones I read, the Mercury News. It says, where are we here? Veterans in government-run homes in many parts of the country that have legalized physician-assisted death, including Colorado, Vermont, and Washington, D.C., Oh, I'm sorry. I have to back up. This talks about Bob Sloan, and he wanted to use California's new law allowing life-ending drugs for the terminally ill when his disease becomes too advanced to bear. But the 73-year-old former U.S. Army sergeant learned that because he lives at the Veterans Home of California in Yountville, the nation's largest retirement home for vets, he must first move out. And then it goes on to say that veterans in government-run homes in other parts of the country that I mentioned are finding similar restrictions because assisted suicide goes against the policy of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So that is an official VA policy. And he, you know, Sloan goes on to say, I should be able to die peacefully in my home, and this is my home. He said where he has said of Yountville, where he has lived since 2013. If I'm in that state or condition, why should I be forced to move to make use of what has been changed into law? It just doesn't make sense. And then there's more details. It goes into the 1997 Assisted Suicide Funding Restriction Act passed by Congress that prohibits the use of federal funds for assisted suicides. So that would explain the VA restrictions, wouldn't it? I don't know. I mean, eventually I'm sure it'll catch up. There'll be enough of a push. I mean, they're making headway with some headway with the whole legalized marijuana thing. So I'm sure in another 10 or 15 years, this will change. Look, it's not, and I don't wholly blame the VA. That's a big ship to turn, right? You can't just, well, I guess you could. there's a lot involved though. People think you can just go in and pass legislation and that's the end of it. I mean, this isn't the 1600s where you stand on a balcony and you decree something and say, I deem it so. And then magically it happens. There's a lot that goes into this. You have to do internal awareness campaigns. You have to spell out the rules. You have to make sure people understand them, from administrators to directors, to admins. I mean, people, you know, to the people answering the phones and customer service. Everybody needs to understand this stuff. You also have to have vetted, meaning sort of legally reviewed, collateral material, right? Because you have to stock the facilities with material on that, brochures, right? Primarily brochures. You can put together whatever, PowerPoints or some kind of internal presentation material. You have to get all of that information compiled, ready, and abbreviated for social media use, media talking points. I mean, there's a lot that goes into any kind of legislative change, especially one with an organization as big as the VA. So it doesn't, it's not a, I guess what I'm saying is I'm sympathetic to a degree to any federal agency that sort of drags their feet on making a sweeping change because there's a lot involved. There's a lot of work involved. Then you have to back up and say, well, okay, with all of that work, how does that impact our annual budget? Do we really want to divert, pick a number, right? Pick a 2% of our annual budget toward a bringing us up to speed with this legislative change. Is it worth it? You have to do a cost-benefit analysis and figure out if that's worth the spend. So I get why, again, to a degree, why groups like the VA don't immediately jump on board with policy changes. On the other hand, you do have to remember, as an organization, who you serve. Why do you exist? What's your mission? That should always take priority. If you don't have enough money in your budget, go explain it to Congress. I mean, they're the ones writing the checks. So anyway, I beat that one into the ground too with the assisted suicide thing. Let's see here. There's an interesting story that's going to be, it should be on the website, the veteransreport.com website. Art exhibit showcases veterans' handmade work. This is out of Virginia. A new art exhibit in the Valley, meaning Wires Cave, Virginia. It wouldn't be the Valley to me, but it would be the Valley to anybody living in Wires Cave. A new art exhibit in the Valley is shining a light on veterans' work. War paints, That's the organization. War Paints is an organization that's kind of like Etsy for military veterans and first responders to market their art or handmade work. The nonprofit partnered with Blue Ridge Community College and the Educational Foundation to create metal art that's being showcased on campus in the Fine Arts Building. War Paints founder and former Navy SEAL Rusty Nosner says it's a great way to help veterans reintegrate into society. So if you have a chance, check out that story. There's some great pictures of the art, especially you folks out there who are talented with your hands, right? You have that sort of that skill with metalwork and primarily welding, soldering, that type of stuff. There's some really good stuff, really interesting work. I had another story. You know what? No, I posted it on, I think I put it online. Yeah. So Missouri Governor Eric Greitens, I think I put that up. I think I talked about this last week. What do you guys think? If you haven't been following, I can't recall the entire story. I mean, I can recall it. I'm not going to recover it. Basically, so Greitens founded the group The Mission Continues, which is a nonprofit that's all over the country. We've had him on the show. They do really good work. And Greitens was the founder. So he got dinged or is getting dinged for using an email address from that group, which is a registered nonprofit. It's a 501c3. He used his email address with that group. I think it was to set up a fundraiser for when he was getting ready to run for governor. And for those of you unaware, Eric Greitens is a former SEAL who is now the governor of Missouri. But he's in, that's one of his issues. The other issue has to do with an affair he had right before he got elected, the year before he was elected, with a hairdresser, and took compromising photographs of her and then threatened to basically to blackmail her if she went public with their affair. So he's in trouble on two fronts. I'm more upset with his misuse or abuse or I guess abuse would be the right word of the nonprofit. And I get it. He founded it, but that why risk it, you know? But I had another story about him. For the life of me, it's an age thing. It's escaping me. I had some other thing to throw on that bonfire, but I'll leave it until next time. So, what else? Oh, so there's, this is what I was going to get into today, but so there are a bunch of stories about Afghanistan this week. As you can imagine, there's a lot of sentiment one way or the other with respect to our involvement in Afghanistan. One of them for military.com says numbers on U.S. counterterrorism efforts in Afghanistan don't add up. There was a report that came out in January. It was quietly issued. A corrected report was quietly. Oh, no, it came out last year. The original report came out last year, and it took a look at U.S. and Afghan counterterrorism missions in the second half of 2017, which have been published by prominent news outlets, and were wrong. The incorrect data, including a breakdown of independent and joint raids and a body count of enemy fighters, were released in an unclassified report to Congress titled Enhancing Security and Stability in Afghanistan. There was another, and so they had, so in January they issued a corrected report and it got no press. Kind of fixing their data. There was another report out of, I don't remember what paper it was, but basically Pakistan is imploring the U.S. to leave Afghanistan or at least have peace talks with the Taliban. One can only guess why. So with all of that said, that leads to this week's new poll question. It's been 17 years since U.S. troops set foot in Afghanistan. Is it time, here's the question, is it time for the U.S. to devise a conclusion, or as some of you would call it, an exit strategy, and leave the country? Yes or no? You can go on the Veterans Report Facebook page and take that poll. I'd be interested to hear from you. Last week's poll question had to do with DHS Homeland Security and immigration law with respect to veterans, their families, and their spouses. And in essence, the question asked, do you think there should be exceptions made for veterans, their spouses, and their families when it comes to immigration law? 100% of you, 100% across the board, said yes, there should be exceptions made, which is astounding. I thought for sure some of my brethren on the uber conservative side would say heck no. 100% said yes. So I guess we see where everybody's priorities are. But anyway, we appreciate the input. So please visit the Facebook page, take the poll. We want to know what you think and what you feel. So with that, we are going to take a quick break. And as I said earlier, we're going to come back with our guests from the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. So hang in there and we'll be back. If you want to keep up with the latest in veteran news away from the radio, stop by our website at www.theveteransreport.com. There you'll find news headlines, along with links to media outlets around the world. You can also find links to every state's veteran services office. And for you film buffs, there's even a link to a war movie database. We appreciate you stopping by the Facebook page at facebook.com/theveteransreport. There, like the website, you'll find the latest news and information related to veterans. For you high-speed individuals who want to limit yourself to 140 characters, stop by our Twitter account. It's a great way to find information on veteran organizations throughout the country and what they're up to. You can tweet us by using @TheVetsReport. If you'd like to email the show directly, please send us your input, comments, or suggestions to editor@TheVeteransReport.com. Thanks again for checking out our pages. Thanks for listening, and thank you for supporting our veterans community. And we are back on the Veterans Report. We appreciate you sticking around with us. We have with our guests today, we have Rob Greer with the Hidden Heroes Foundation, and we have Steve Schwab with the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. Steve and Rob, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
We're great, thanks so much.
I assume that I got the intro correct because neither one of you cut me off?
No.
All right.
We're actually both from the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, and then Hidden Heroes is a campaign of the foundation.
Okay, all right, that's where I misunderstood. Okay.
Okay.
So, Rob, you're part of that, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. I just want to make sure we're clear.
No problem.
So, for those uninitiated or those unaware. The Elizabeth Dole Foundation obviously bears the name of Elizabeth Dole, who was among other things, the first female senator from North Carolina, among other things. But she has a long and storied political history. Without going through all of it, because I don't want to make this solely about her, although I do have a lot of respect for everything she's done. Who wants to, Steve, I assume that you could give me a sort of a general overview of the foundation itself, when it was founded, and really what's the mission?
Sure. Well, we were founded out of a really profound personal experience that Senator Dole had following her public service. And she's still, of course, in public service today, having founded the foundation. But we started 6 years ago. She's been spending a long part of her life supporting, loving, and nurturing her veteran husband, Bob Dole, who himself is a storied public servant of many years in the Senate as majority leader, running for president several times. He was injured in World War II. Really badly. In the last 10 years or so, he's had his really severe medical ups and downs. And he spent about a year at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in D.C. 5 years ago. And, she thought she was going to lose him. And over the course of that year, with all the ups and downs, she came to know the wives, the children, the mothers and fathers of wounded warriors who were struggling big time to care for their wounded warriors following their stay at the hospital. And there's a whole new generation of warriors post 9/11 who are facing lifetimes wounds, injuries, and illnesses, the kinds of conditions that our country really is only coming now to understand since we're still in the longest period of war in U.S. history. And these folks are paralyzed when they leave the hospital. going home and facing a lifetime of care, having to give up their jobs and their livelihoods to do that, many of them at least, having to raise children in addition, in some cases, young spouses inheriting almost like another child because their husband or wife returns with severe mental and emotional conditions, and they need constant care. So she started the foundation with an aim to focus on those caregivers to understand who they are, what they need, and we did research and found out that there's 5.5 million Roberts across the country, and Robert is one of those caregivers who we empower through the Dole Fellows Program. One of our programs that we started right away was identifying caregivers across the country who are dealing with these issues day by day in states all across the country. So we have multiple fellows in all 50 states. And folks like Robert, by virtue of their stories, get their communities activated, encourage other caregivers, for instance, in the Western Pennsylvania area, to stand up and self-identify and find services and support through our foundation, because right now America is not paying attention, at least not enough, and we're trying to change that paradigm at the foundation to the caregivers of our wounded warriors, the 5.5 million folks who are voluntarily caring for these folks at home. They're desperate for support. They're in need for support, and we're changing the game through our programs in communities all across the country on how to support them. And Robert is you know, a hometown hidden hero in Western Pennsylvania who just started as a Dole Fellow, and you know, he could probably share a little bit of his story that just kind of hits home why this is so important.
Yeah, jump in there, Rob.
Excellent. No, thank you so much, Steve. No, it's an honor to be a Dole Fellow, and I've learned so much from them. It's in a short period of time. It's amazing. Any caregiver can go and sign up at hiddenheroes.org. There's a wealth of information that's there to support caregivers. I feel that, you know, it was just an honor, and it still is an honor to take care of my father. Dad has just been a fantastic individual, you know, raised me from a young child, and in his time of need, there was no question in my mind for me to be there. I can share real quickly a little bit about his story. Dad was the first person of color to play in the Sugar Bowl with the University of Pittsburgh back in 1956. And, of course, there was some controversy there where Georgia Tech played against Pitt, and a bad call ended up Georgia Tech winning the game. But Dad has just had a love of the University of Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh ever since. Afterwards, the next year, he went into the Air Force. And so Dad was in the Air Force from 1957 through 1968, roughly. He is 100% service-disabled veteran, going through health challenges. And, of course, you know, as we all age, there's some geriatric issues that come into play. My father recently was diagnosed with stage one non-small lung cancer and had a golf ball-sized tumor near his lung. Long story short, he went through chemotherapy, he went through radiation. After radiation, we had 3 visits to the emergency room. But long story short, we just had a CT scan, and he is completely cancer-free. So we are so thankful for the doctors at the Veterans Administration, and that's the one thing. I don't feel that they get enough credit. They work really hard down there, and they just did a fantastic job, and we're so thankful for them.
Well, I know that the caregiver end of things, as it relates to veterans and veterans healthcare, that's a big topic. It has been for about a year, including the expansion of the Caring for Our Veterans Act and other legislation that's still sort of out there pending and waiting. It's nice to hear that you're getting a good reception from the VA, because so many times it's the one standout issue, and everybody sort of lumps it into the, you know, the bad apple barrel. But I think, you know, 99% of what the VA does and the people involved in that organization are fantastic, and they're doing a great job. So that's good to hear.
Absolutely. And if I may add, you know, nobody knew of Dad's story down at the Veterans Administration. And he got treated with expert care, just like most other people that we see when we're down there. I mean, I've not seen a bad situation, but from his experience in dealing with Dr. Venegas Ortiz, Dr. Somasundaram. These are just top-notch professionals, and I mean, I've really seen just top-notch care, even all the way down to the kitchen staff who are there to help people navigate if they can't carry their food. They're there to help out. It really is a good atmosphere, but, you know, again, we've had a very wonderful set of unique experiences, so.
Could I just comment on you mentioned the Caring for Our Veterans Act, and you bring up a very, very good point. Right now, the VA has a very small program, a comprehensive support program for caregivers, about 26,000 caregivers who are post 9/11. So Rob is pre 9/11. His father served before 9/11. And so Rob doesn't qualify, and his fellow pre 9/11 caregivers, for comprehensive support, where a stipend can be given to supplement income that's lost. For those who are facing really challenging circumstances at home. And so the Caring for Our Veterans Act, which the Dole Foundation has been leading the fight on, would expand the caregiver program to caregivers like Rob who are pre-9/11, who need the additional financial support and respite support and training to be effective at-home caregivers for their loved ones. And everyone's situation is different. Rob's situation may not be as challenging as the neighbor down the road, although Rob's is quite challenging. But right now, there's an inequity in that not all eras of war are treated fairly or eligible for the program. And we're on the verge of changing that so that every era of war can qualify for caregiver support. And while Rob's care has been fantastic and his support has been fantastic, we want to raise the bar and set a standard across the VA that caregivers are integrated into the medical team, they're qualifying for support universally no matter what era of war they served in, and they're seamlessly being brought into the care process so that their experience inside the institution or the hospital is as equally seamless when they leave and they understand what they need to do at home. And that's where the big challenge is right now. So many folks are leaving institutional care feeling completely isolated, paralyzed, alone, and that's where we come in. We offer this fellowship. We offer an online community. We have 110 cities across the country that have become Hidden Hero cities. Pittsburgh is one of our strongest cities, and we celebrated that community last October. We have an amazing group of local advocates that have come together, and we're trying to duplicate that in every community across the country so that folks know that alongside the wounded warrior and that veteran, who rightly get a lot of care and attention, is that loved one who's caring for them at home, often in the shadows or off to the side in the picture, and they need our help and support as well.
So just as an aside, and maybe this is too far in the weeds, but how do you determine which cities to focus on? Are there certain criteria? Is there certain infrastructure, access to medical care?
Yep. It's a great question. So we launched a campaign called Hidden Heroes a year ago September. Tom Hanks is actually our national chair. And Tom and Senator Dole, folks from NBC, Tom Brokaw and others, helped us launch a multidimensional effort which included challenging every city in America to become a Hidden Hero city. So it didn't matter who you are, where you come from, small or large, we're willing to work with any city. We signed on the National Conference of Mayors, who put together a resolution that a city is required to adopt, which basically says that the mayor and the city council need to acknowledge that caregivers of wounded warriors are important and that community was going to do everything it can to start an awareness effort to encourage caregivers to raise their hands to self-identify because they typically don't, and that their community was going to be there for them. And then from there, we work with communities that raise their hands to assess the kinds of supports that are available in their communities. And then we look to improve competencies where there are challenges. So some communities are better at respite care and mental health support, where other communities aren't as good at financial and legal support. So the requirement is the city's got to make an institutional commitment to raise awareness, to get caregivers to raise their hands, and then to work with us on that community assessment. And honestly, I'm excited to say that we're signing on cities fast and furious. We actually needed to slow down the process so that we can make sure that we're being substantive and really working with those cities to measure their services and support. So we're taking the time to do that right now. We've hired a full-time staff member to focus on it, and we're just thrilled with the reception we're getting in communities across the country.
Well, for, obviously from a national perspective, for our listeners online, I mean, that's great news that it's growing and it offers a lot of opportunity for people to get involved, and offer some assistance or at least browbeat their local elected officials into getting on board. But from a hometown standpoint, that's even better news. I'm sure you're both aware of the huge veteran population and the veteran legacy here in Pittsburgh going back, to the Civil War. And we still have one of the largest veteran populations in the country. So it's good to hear that you're so dialed in here.
Well, and other communities, frankly, need to adopt the Pittsburgh model. Your history is just as you stated, but your leadership from the mayor to the corporate leadership to media folks like you and the organizational commitment you've made to stand up these stories and to tell communities and folks across the community how they can get involved. It's an example, and we're shining a big light on communities who do it really well, like Pittsburgh, and we're challenging other communities. We were in Seattle last week pointing to the Pittsburgh example and saying, adopt what Pittsburgh is doing. I think that's a point of pride for Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania for sure.
Yeah, because that's what we need, something else to hang our hat on. No, I'm kidding. Well, and good news for you, Rob. I mean, you know full well, being a hometown guy, if there's one thing people love here, if there's two things, it's veterans and Pitt football. So,
absolutely. And when I go to the Veterans Administration, it's funny to see how many people have Pitt gear on. And the other interesting thing is that Dad had a knee replacement surgery last year, and his doctor's staff was from UPMC, and I didn't know that they rotate in and out doctors every 3 months. So they can get training, and so they can really get a lot of experience under their belt. At the VA, they could be doing anywhere from 40 to 60 surgeries every day. So it's a very busy place. They do an excellent job. And this is just from an observational standpoint of somebody who has had to navigate the system, with his loved one. So I just feel that they do a phenomenal job.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Pittsburgh is a world-renowned medical town just in its own right. So it's and I've known a lot of doctors, neighbors, friends who have rotated in and out of the VA to get that experience. And they consider it invaluable, not even from a training standpoint, but just from a personal takeaway. So it's good to hear. So Steve or Rob, both, what would you say is one of your apart and aside from the growth of the foundation and the success you've had to date, can you point to one or two major, I guess, milestones or achievements?
I would suggest, one I pointed out was the fact that we've recruited so many communities so quickly to take on an issue that America, frankly, wasn't talking about at all. Another one that we're really proud of, and I love that you're in Pittsburgh. I'm in D.C., and D.C. Can be a not-so-fun place these days with the heaviness of our politics and the divisiveness of our dialogue. And some people point to it and say we don't get much done, but we've seen recently a coming together of Democrats and Republicans to the side of this issue. And we have a big legislative platform. We spend a lot of time on the Hill advocating for caregivers, and the president signed into law at the end of December, right before Christmas, an act that we've been advocating for 2 years. It's called the Raise Family Caregiver Act. And right now, all the services and support for caregivers across the federal government are disjointed. Surprise, right? So agencies that invest in communities like Pittsburgh and communities all across the country for respite and training, and these cities depend on that funding. It's not well organized at all. And this act that was signed is going to create a national body of experts, including us and other city leaders like those in Pittsburgh, who are going to make a whole set of recommendations on how the federal government can reorganize its services and support for caregivers. So we're going to re-coordinate and we're going to reprioritize services at the local level. We should be doing policy in Washington, but we should be giving the resources to communities like Pittsburgh so that folks like Rob and his family can benefit and get those services delivered as quickly and efficiently as possible. So we had a huge victory in getting that legislative done, that legislation done and over the hump, and now we're going to execute on that front. And then I think another major milestone, and we celebrate this every day, is every day we get another caregiver to raise their hand. Folks like Rob are reluctant to, I mentioned earlier, to self-identify and step forward. Maybe, Rob, you can talk about this a little bit. But caregivers like to serve in the shadows. They, you know, their loved ones, it's their duty to do it. But we can tell you that they're sacrificing. Many of them are leaving their jobs, giving up their incomes. And we need these people. We need your listeners who are caregivers, who are serving in any capacity for their loved one, for a veteran, to raise their hands. Go to hiddenheroes.org, and they're going to find a community of support and peers that are there waiting to make their life better.
Well, I was going to ask, and Rob, if you want to lay out a little bit of detail in terms of how you got involved, that would be helpful. But one of my questions really was, and to sound very blunt, because I don't know a way to soften it, what qualifies somebody? I mean, what gives somebody the, I guess, the avenue to volunteer to do this?
Sure. You know, it's a very good question. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people who just have kind of gotten thrown into this situation. I had always been someone who stayed in touch with both of my parents, even while growing up. They were involved in my life, and I was involved in their lives. So it wasn't like it was a separated or disjointed type of thing. Even whenever I lived in Columbus, Ohio, I still drove back on the weekends to help make salads so my dad could just take those salads out and give them to my mother during the week, so he didn't have to make meals, because that's just not Dad. He was never one to be in the kitchen and cook. He just sat down at the table when the dinner was ready. But then when Mom got Alzheimer's and slowly started going downhill, and then his responsibilities started to pick up, and I just, you know, here he was getting to be in his late 70s, and now he's going to be taking care of full-time a person with Alzheimer's disease. It just broke my heart. So I had to spend more time traveling from Columbus, Ohio, and then had to move back to Pittsburgh to really take on a more full-time role. And yes, it does put stress on the family. And you know, my ex asked me, you know, why do you spend so much time taking care of your parents? And I had to kind of, you know, take a deep breath and say, you know, I was tough for me to answer. I said, well, one, I love them. Two, it's my responsibility. They're my parents. And then three, you know, if I didn't, then, you know, what would happen to them? So yes, Steve brought up an excellent point. It is hard for caregivers to ask for help. That's like the last thing you want to do. You're just in the trenches, taking care of medications, taking care of grocery shopping, taking care of doctor's appointments, and managing all the paperwork that goes along with that. You know, you just kind of get into a routine, and asking for help is definitely a hard thing to do. So when I did happen to meet with the Dole organization in Pittsburgh, I was really unaware of the Hidden Heroes program at all. But I learned a lot whenever they came to Pittsburgh, met some of the great people there. They also saw our story and decided, you know what, we think that you'd be a good candidate to be a fellow. So I had to submit a lot of information, went into my background, and I'm just thankful to be a part of the organization. And again, they're doing such a fantastic job in advocating for caregivers, because caregivers, it's tough for us to do it for ourselves.
Well, and just as a follow-up to that, is there any kind of training that goes into this, like medical training, nutrition yep. training, exercise?
So that's a great question. So to my point earlier, a lot of what the VA does, they have fantastic care in the hospital setting, and then they hand Rob and his fellow caregivers a bunch of papers and say, now, you know, this is what you got to do at home. Many of them come home and they're complex medical terminology and all that they got to translate. So yeah. A lot of them, Rob included, are left to their own devices to figure out how to do it. And then there's community organizations, national organizations like ours, that work with communities to find resources so that we can train the caregivers. We train thousands of caregivers through our our community. The VA trains caregivers through its comprehensive caregiving program, but the system, the hospital system, isn't providing training that's translated at home when they leave the hospital. That's one of the things we're trying to change. Right now, we're working, frankly, on training doctors, nurses, and social workers at the VA on how to work with caregivers and how to empower them when they leave the hospital. We're not going to fix the issue on training until we change the culture with doctors, nurses, and social workers that empowering that caregiver when they leave is important. And we're in the midst of doing that with the VA across all of its system. It's going to be a game changer. We think once we change the paradigm with physicians, nurses, and social workers on working with caregivers, the caregivers will then be trained and empowered to be more effective providers at home. We, Robin has, and the Fellows Program are given a robust set of training that they can then share with other caregivers in their community through the program. But training is a huge element of what we offer and what our community partners offer.
And may I add real quickly, they also, the Veterans Administration does also provide physical therapy in the home as well as occupational therapy in the home. They also have a stipend to upgrade an existing kitchen or bathroom. And so we were able to upgrade the bathroom so it's more accessible, so I could get a wheelchair in there so Dad can get a shower. So that's an in-home care that has just helped tremendously.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I didn't know they would do that.
Yeah, if you qualify, as Rob does, they do offer those kind of enhancements in the home. It's not, you know, there's a science to qualify for that. So folks just have to kind of get through that process.
So if I wanted to become a caregiver, if I had somebody at home, if I wanted to take care of one of my parents who were a veteran and they were getting to that point, what do I do? Do I go online? Do I call?
Yep, go to hiddenheroes.org. Sign on and join our community. You'll immediately be connected to peers who will help you, you know, in any facet you need, whether it's you're just starting out, you're mid-stage through your caregiving journey. We have a lot of partners and that provide directed interventions for mental health or training or education and support. So you can really find the gamut. And we have a couple hundred resources on there that you can search through that are very specific to the kinds of needs that caregivers have all throughout their journey. So I'd say if you're anywhere in your journey as a caregiver, go right to hiddenheroes.org. If you don't find what you need online, you'll see there's a phone number to contact us. And if we can't find you the service and support you need, we'll find someone who can. And we do that on a regular basis.
Now, are there any sort of big initiatives coming down the pike that you can discuss yet?
I previewed what we're doing with the VA. Our biggest initiative right now is training. You know, we want to train every doctor, nurses, and social worker in the VA system on how to work effectively with caregivers. And then we're going to challenge medical systems like the big ones in Pittsburgh to adopt that model so that caregivers, whether they're veteran or civilian caregivers, because there's 40 million caregivers across the country, 5.5 of them are military and veterans. There's a lot more. We're going to challenge hospitals across the country to adopt that model so that doctors empower caregivers all across the country. And then the Fellows Program and Rob and his peers all across the country are going to be, finding community initiatives to adopt that are specific to the needs of the community they reside in. So Pittsburgh, unique ways to support Pittsburgh's needs. So those are some of the big things coming down the pike. The other thing that folks can get involved in is help on the advocacy front. If they come to our website at hiddenheroes.org, they'll find ways to help us tug at the heels of their local congressional representatives and senators on the things that caregivers need. But there's all kinds of ways that people can get involved if they go to the website.
And I was going to say, I'm assuming everybody can send in donations as well.
Oh, we absolutely would appreciate that. That certainly helps us sustain our efforts.
Never turn that down.
That's right.
So, Rob, real quick, because we have about a minute and a half left. Rob, briefly, do you – I mean, I know that Steve mentioned, you know, folks like you operating sort of in the shadows, but do you get any feedback from the community? Have you reached out to anybody? Does anybody know what you're involved in?
I've reached out to some family who are out of town as far as feedback from them and letting them know, you know, as far as how Dad is doing, but also, you know, letting them know as far as being a hidden hero. They just feel it's amazing. They know what type of job I do. I would encourage caregivers to hang in there. You know, have patience. You're doing a fantastic job. You know, don't let the workload get you down. But also, you know, document. And that's one of the things that we do. You know, when I make a meal for Dad, he'll smile and he'll take a picture with it. And, you know, it's just something that I can show, you know, family and friends and also his team of doctors as far as nutritionally what he's eating. So it helps in a number of different ways. But, you know, like I said, I'm just so thankful for Steve and the Dole Foundation and also the Veterans Administration. And, you know, they've just provided great support.
Well, and it's a good story to tell. And I'm not sure enough people know how heavily involved you guys are, really in shaping policy too, but also in helping the veterans community. And you're doing wonderful things. As far as the VSOs in DC go, I know that you are you're one of the top tier organizations there, and you're leading the charge with some of the other major groups. So I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing this story with us. This is great.
Well, thanks for having us on. We really appreciate it. And thanks for the Pittsburgh community for being such a model community in all forms, supporting veterans and military families.
Well, it's good news for all the vets out there. So again, our guests today, Robert Greer and Steve Schwab with the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks
thank you.
And that does it for this episode of the Veterans Report. Until next time, I'm your host, Jim Cannon.
You've been listening to the Veterans Report. Let others know about the show. You can find us online at theveteransreport.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to editor@theveteransreport.com. Join us again at the same time for up-to-date veterans news and information. The Veterans Report. Thank you for your service, and carry on.
The Veterans Report has been sponsored by James Cannon.